The town turns on Gawain for killing their guardian, but Gawain's saved by a beautiful woman called Lin.
Called what?
Called what, Dave? What's her name? Say her name, Dave.
What's the motherfucking name?
Say her name.
The brain,
say her name, Dave.
The fucking processing power it's taking me to come at this.
Say it, Dave. Say her name. There are good movies and there are great movies. But that's not what we watch here, because this is shitty cinema.
You haven't got a beard.
We are three film masochists who love to take on the worst movies we can find, centered around our monthly theme to answer one simple question. Would you watch it again? I'm Jay, and I'm joined by Dave.
Hello.
And Casey. Every week, one of us has to pick a movie based on that month's theme. What's this month's theme, Dave?
Well, this month, we're looking at movies based on those oldest of tales, those focused of tales. It's Folk Tales Month. Last week, I brought Around the World in 80 Days, the classic Jules Verne story, which I know when we all read the book, we were picturing Jackie Chan in the part of Passepartout.
Absolutely. That's the only way I can see it.
I also pictured Jackie Chan every time I read Anne Rice. Every character.
Yeah, that's true. Most books I'm picturing Jackie Chan. Twilight was a little weird, but I got through it.
It's the only way I got through it.
When they cast Kristen Stewart, I was real disappointed. That part was written for you, Jackie.
But there's 1 week left in Folktales Month. So, Casey, what did we watch this week?
Strap your panties on. We watched Sword of the Valiant, The Legend of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight with Sean Connery as the Green Knight. From 1984.
I'm proud of you having delivered that in a single breath.
Yeah, I hate how little of that was the actual title.
The whole thing was the title.
Starring Sean Connery as the Green Knight. But it was. I'm sure, on the poster as
it
well.
It was literally right next to everything else I just read, so that's why I threw it in there.
All right, Casey, before we go too far, we're going to need an elevator pitch where you sell us on this movie in 10 seconds or less. Here's your setup. You were wandering hungry through the woods, and a strange woman with a nice tent offered you a feast, and you couldn't help yourself.
Women helping women.
She gave you some great advice to go down the stairs next to all of these bones and blow this giant horn for no good reason.
She's my new best friend. Of course I'll do it.
Unfortunately for you, that horn is going to summon the Black Knight, who's about to make your day terrible. So in the 10 seconds before he shows up, sell us on this movie.
Let's give Sean Connery an Ann Getty's makeover and a close shave by a hand-me-down He-Man. In retaliation, he tries to kill him again after a year of trying to grow his pubes out.
8 seconds, and you kind of got the gist of that, I think.
Beard. Grow his beard out.
We all knew what that was a euphemism for, because he had a 5 o'clock shadow. He was talking about his downstairs beard. His bottom beard.
Why don't we adventure into this folktale and go over the movie that shitty cinema watched? King Arthur uses the Yuletide feast as a time to remind his knights that they've become a bunch of soft-ass bitches.
Bitches. The lot of them.
As if on cue, the Green Knight rolls up and challenges anyone to a game. If they take up the Green Knight's axe to cut his head off in one blow, in just one, they win prizes, I guess. But if they fail, well, he gets to remove their head.
Listen, by rolls up, you mean rides his horse into your fucking dining room, blowing leaves in your foyer.
Extremely disrespectful.
Do you know how hard it is to sweep glitter out of stone flooring? He's left a glittery snail trail throughout their whole home.
Fair. Let's not go down that road. We will talk about the glittery snail trail later.
When none of the knights step up, Arthur decides to do it himself, until a squire called Gawain steps up. Gawain looks exactly like Prince Adam, which is why he's immediately knighted by Arthur.
He-Man! You are my champion!
Gawain takes up the axe and cleaves the Green Knight's head straight off his shoulders.
The Green Knight's body casually strolls over and places his head back onto his neck. Instead of returning the favor, the Green Knight says, "Listen, man, I'm gonna be back in a year to cut your head off. But if you figure out the answer to this riddle, then I guess I will cut your stupid head off."
So Gawain rides out to see the world, become a man, and solve the riddle to not die. One of these feels a little more important, but okay. His first encounter is with Morgan Le Fay, who sends Gawain to go piss off the guardian of the lost city of Lyonesse, because why not?
Gawain's got some sword skills, though, and defeats the guardian, who begs Gawain to return him to Lyonesse to die. Then, when they arrive, the guardian's like, "Hey, y'all! I'm your beloved guardian, and I'm dying, and this guy's my murderer!"
Such a bitch move. The town turns on Gawain, who's saved by a beautiful woman called Lynette. She gives Gawain the One Ring so he can invisibly sneak away.
Lynette. Not Lynette.
Yeah. Lynette would be a... Lynette. It's Lynette. Like, I gotta clean the Lynette out of my dryer.
The town turns on Gawain for killing their savior, but he's saved by a beautiful woman called Lynette.
Okay, but can we just say that you have to respect the pettiness of, hey, lead me back miles to this city, okay, and make sure I get there safely and get separated from your best friend / employee for me to just immediately have everybody in town turn on you.
Like, petty so gangster.
I loved it so much. I was like, ugh.
I did too.
I went 11 miles out of my way to invent the bus I'm throwing you under.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mad respect. Mad respect.
I hope if it ever comes down to it, I will be that petty in my death.
Yeah, that is not petty king. That is petty emperor.
I've been that petty.
Emperor of petty.
In a couple almost deaths. So I've got a good track record.
My one regret is that I didn't stab you first.
Hey, I just lean in. I just want to let you know I shit my pants before I died, so I'll double shit later.
She gives Gawain the One Ring so he can, you know, invisibly sneak away. A trick he only uses once. Once in the whole goddamn movie. Anyway, Gawain immediately loves Lynette because Tinder doesn't exist yet and she's like the first woman he has ever met that isn't married already.
Or related to him.
Yeah.
Or isn't dying of plague.
Or related to him and married.
To the plague and the struggle.
Married's not as much of a blocker in the Arthurian mythology as it should be.
Neither is brother and sisterhood. So
also, yeah. But when they try to steal away, Lynette gets captured and Gawain just gets like teleported out.
The Green Knight uses Morgan's crystal ball to scold Gawain. Because this game has rules, man. Meeting Lynette and taking her ring violate those clearly articulated rules. Come on, Gawain, are you like Tom Brady here?
Yeah, I'm so confused. Like, obviously, Sean Connery, in and out of movies, lives on implications. So, like, I just don't understand how meeting a broad and getting a ring was against any rules.
I do buy Sean Connery getting very mad when someone breaks his implied rules.
Yeah. Yeah, that... Yelling from a tent seems to be the exact way he would go about it in my mind.
You don't get away with this for decades by explaining things explicitly. Anyway, Gawain meets a thieving friar who sends him to a sage where he agrees to play by pretty much whatever rules. The sage teleports him back to Lyonesse, but it's like a fucking century has passed since he was last there. People are covered in cobwebs and frozen in time, but somehow also old now, but not dead.
Yeah, and his girlfriend stopped using like collagen or something. She looks like shit.
Gross.
Well, when Gawain puts the One Ring back on Lynette, she de-ages. He then goes to gather firewood to give some passing knights the perfect opportunity to just fridge her again. Gawain sneaks into their castle as a prisoner to organize a revolt, which is admittedly fucking great, but when they try to save Lynette, a fire breaks out.
Gawain thinks she's killed and ends up in a different castle entirely. Since Mario taught us this is where you find the princess, obviously, move on. Since Mario taught us this is where you find the princess, Gawain finds Lynette. Turns out the other castle's baron removed her from her room on fire and traded her to the guy that owns this castle because women are just property you can trade around here.
Lynette gives Gawain a going-away present. It's a scarf that will prevent all harm. Since his year is about up, Gawain goes looking for the Green Knight and runs back into the first baron who's out looking for him.
Ooh. Gawain defeats all the relevant parties so that the baron's army retreats. Then the Green Knight shows up and Gawain's all, I didn't figure out the riddle, so let's just bang my man and get this over with.
And by bang, he kneels to have his head forcibly removed. Fortunately, the scarf of magical protection tanks the hit and Gawain's head remains firmly connected to his neck.
The two fight and Gawain somehow lands a mortal blow. The Green Knight asks him to stop as he quickly just ages to death. Then he returns to Lynette, who says, sorry, bud, I gotta go back to my magic lost city, turns into a bird, and flies away.
That's how the movie ends.
I
abruptly
was screaming.
Like in the middle of a shot. I thought my computer froze.
I was really hoping in that last shot they were going to go John Woo with it and like slow-mo the bird out and maybe have a bunch of other birds and maybe a gun fight, but no. Once again, disappointed. But I didn't see that ending coming. So kudos to them for surprising me.
Like that's the ultimate twist. Like Sir Gawain shows up and is like, it looks like you've brought a sword, but a sword is just a big knife. And you shouldn't bring a big knife to a gunfight. Ba-pow! Pigeons and doves.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they ran out of budget or that was always the planned ending?
That's a good question. I am only vaguely familiar with the poem that this is based on. And my vague understanding is that this is loosely inspired by.
Okay, say more, because I didn't know this was based on anything.
Oh, yeah. So this, I'm not going to claim to be an expert, but I do know the overarching themes of The Green Knight. And they took some big, big liberties with it. The first one
Canon film taking liberties?
I know.
Blasphemy.
Who would have thought it? Honestly, for being a canon film, it's almost shocking they got as much right as they did, which is barely anything, but, like, the Green Knight is still called that.
There is Sir Gawain, and there is a Green Knight.
Yeah. So, ultimately, the big end of it is that the Green Knight chooses not to cut off Gawain's head, and just points out that the whole thing has been a ruse for him to show that Arthur's knights are a bunch of bitches. And Gawain's the least bitchy of all of them, but was still a bitch by showing up with the magic sash. It's one of the great things. I kind of like the Arthurian legends because a bunch of them, people are like, what's the point? There isn't one. It's just a story about some people.
Do you think that's like their version of Law and Order SVU back then? So like in 400 years,
yes,
someone will be like, watch that show and be like, what does it mean? What were they trying to say?
100%.
Well, Dick Wolf is always trying to push his agenda, I can tell you that much. But really, there's no meaning to anything.
There's no meaning.
People try to piece the Arthurian legends together. There's no piecing them together. They're just a bunch of random characters. The canons do not work at all.
It's not a fucking shared universe.
No. But there's one other big change they made in this that kind of fucking ruins it, and it's when the Green Knight shows up. Because he comes through the door and immediately says that the point of the game is for them to cut his head off, and then he will cut their head off in return. And that's not how the poem goes. In the poem, the game is just that they have to give him a cut, and he will return the cut in return. Which means Gawain could have just taken a finger. He could take a hand. He could have just decided to take a slice at his hair and gotten a much needed haircut in return.
Oh.
As he should have.
But he
Gawain
chooses,
goes for the head.
Yes, but Gawain chooses to go for the head, at which point the honor of Camelot demands that he allow his head to be taken in return. They change that here, and the game immediately is head for head, and I hate that. It really takes away a lot of Gawain's, like, it takes away his character arc, because the point was supposed to be that he was so arrogant he thought he could take his head and avoid any retribution. And then it takes away his growth of learning how to deal with the fact that by making that choice, he's giving up his life in a year and a day from now.
Yeah, we just don't have time for all of that, Dave.
Yeah.
Please.
How dare
you
try and
actually have. You gotta show them walking in riding places. When this movie first started and Gawain and his manservant go off into the woods, I was
Gawain
getting...
And boy.
Gawain and boy.
Gawain is the boy between these two. The manservant has a better beard than me. Like, I really want to... Give me an introduction to your barber, because it's great. Gawain has the most, like, English foppish child haircut I have. This man was Tarzan in a previous film, and they did him so dirty with the haircut here.
It is Prince Adam from He-Man. Tell me
it's
is
not. Prince Adam meets Suzanne Summers in Step by Step. But all I right. was getting some samurai cop acting vibes from Gawain. Between his acting and the bad wig, I feel like those guys would be friends in real life. I wonder if they've ever done a movie together. The samurai cop guy.
I see what you... They have a resemblance.
Yeah, I can see it. I think they'd take each other a little too seriously.
Is this like when you introduce friends you think are going to love each other and they hate each other? And you're like, come on. You guys are exactly fucking alike, and that's why you don't like each other.
I will say, I appreciate that Gawain asked the question that I would have asked immediately in a suit of armor, which is like, hey, man, how'd I take a piss in this?
Yeah, that's... Okay, I do think it's a little silly that Gawain didn't ask that question until he had to take a piss.
Right, yeah.
You
but,
asked that... That's an important question to ask before you put the suit of armor on.
Correct. However, he did ask, and then he was given, a fork as a key?
Yeah, it's this weird little, like, key slash fork looking thing. It has two small, like, key-like prongs on the end of it.
Yeah, it kind of like forks, but instead of going into four, it splits into two, and they're, like, key-like at the end. It's weird.
Yeah, I have
no
idea.
Oh, you really paid attention to it.
Yeah, I was curious how that worked.
I have no idea. Casey, I believe you had a theory on how the key fork is used.
Yeah, it just pries open the dick plate so you can whip your wiener out. I'm sure they have one for the back as well, so you don't have to take off a whole suit of armor to take a shit. We see the fork a second time when he decides to bang Linnet, because she makes a comment. I don't know, I couldn't hear without subtitles, so I kind of guessed my way through this movie. But he, like... pulls out the fork and Mentos smiles at her like, that's why I got this. So does the armor stay on during sex? Question. Because that's the last time we see the armor until the end of the movie when he gets new armor.
Yeah, that's the implication, is that I guess my best theory was that he's using this fork thing to, like, prop open the dick plate on his armor.
It's like
an
awning.
Hood.
Like a hood of a car.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you open the hood of your car, you know, you just wedge that in there to keep it open, because he apparently needs it open also to have sex. And not that the movie bothered to answer it, but to answer your question on how he poops, that's actually open on most plate armor. You don't have anything over there.
Yeah, you don't have a butt plate. I assumed that was like a, hey, let's take this off kind of thing. But I assume that plate armor is strapped to you with leather straps, and you take
did
the
Did everybody
straps
just,
on,
like,
so.
Stab people in the asses back then? Because I would.
If you could get to them, sure. That's a whole other thing. It turns out Sword of the Valiant doesn't know much about how plate armor works, though.
No.
Because at one point we see our hero in full plate armor being lowered onto a horse in a winch because his plate armor is so heavy. And they just got on like anyone else does. You can just walk around in it. You don't need a goddamn, you don't need construction equipment.
I was
going to
ask that because I was like, well, he felt like he had to get back on the horse in the middle of the woods. How did he get on if he needed a winch?
Correct. That is the precise, if you need a winch to get on. What happens when you get off or get knocked off?
I love that idea that, like, every time in a battle somebody gets knocked off their horse, they have to walk all the way back to the nearest friendly winch.
Maybe or there's slither like out of their armor.
Is there an agreement among sides, like the Christmas truce, that, like, okay, I can come to your winch and you'll let me get back on my horse and get past this line before you fuck with me again? Because it just sucks walking around like this.
I like the idea of them all waiting to get winched onto horses lined up like at the roller skating place with their skates in hand.
Yeah.
Socked foot.
It's like a freeze tag game where like the real bottleneck is people getting back on the horses after they get knocked off, actually.
Man, I'm shocked we haven't talked about Sean Connery yet because he's the biggest one on the cover of this film. And he has a strong ass entrance. It's a very like Conor McGregor style. Like, look at me. I've got lights. I've got special effects. Look at all the leaves I've blown in. You're going to be sweeping for days. Ha ha ha. I'm going to talk shit about everybody here. And he does it all looking like he fought a Joann Fabrics clearance bin.
Also, this whole feast gave me a very Beowulf vibe to it as well. So it's amazing how many classic literature this reminded me of that it wasn't.
Okay. The glitter, the bronzer. It's not just the glitter. It's the bronzer for me.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Connery looks like he was maybe trying to go for the part of C-3PO in showing his range and like, look what I look like bronzed. It's almost to like old Greg levels. That's how insane it is. You at one shot, I saw up his sleeve and like, you can tell where he stopped putting the bronzer, but he looked like a stripper in 2008. Like when tanning was really hot shit.
It's incredible relative to everyone else in this movie how sparkly he is, and he's supposed to be playing a mythical figure, and their version of doing that is to give him stripper glitter and a little deer crown that's just gorgeous. I love
it's painted
for him.
Green his antlers,
they're adorable.
It is kind of cute.
I like that he bitches about the cold and he has like his fucking chest exposed in his armor and green frills.
Oh,
I'm like, bro.
You have like a torso window in your spandex suit.
He's got a full on JoJo titty window. It's.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
man.
It's not even a titty window because it's explicitly framing the dad bod.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it for him, but it is definitely a choice that was made.
Right.
And you don't get to complain about the cold.
Listen, did you complain about being cold in Zardos? And you had a lot less to work with.
That's true.
Though that natural sweater helped keep you warm.
It does not look like there was a whole lot of money spent on this film. Oh, well, from what I can tell, the budget was about $4 million.
That cape, that looked insulated. Yeah, that looked hot and flammable. So
throughout most of the film, he's wearing a costume which could be described as a belly window. And I thought it was originally a design choice, and it may be that he just at some point overheated and ripped open the suit, and that's what we're seeing.
I thought you were going to say like over 8 and was just like, I've got to have space right now. Cut me out of
this. I like that better. And the director I've was been there. Too, they're like, I'm not going to say anything. We're just going to roll with this.
You know who I was disappointed who was in this movie less than Sean Connery was the tent witch lady. I thought she was interesting and kind of fun. And they kind of just didn't use her.
The Green Knight turns her into a frog with his yes. Green Knight green finger. He green fingers her.
Yes.
And then she shows up later, though, to Harry Gawain.
It's one of my favorite things about this movie, actually. Because, yeah, in the original Green Knight again, the whole thing is just Morgan Le Fay showing how Arthur's knights are kind of bitches. And that's the whole point. And in this version, the Green Knight is apparently some unrelated force to her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he just turns Morgan Le Fay into a frog. And I'm like, holy shit, Morgan Le Fay's a big deal in Arthurian legend. How is she going to respond to this? And then she just kind of doesn't.
She like offers to fuck him. She's like, hey, what are you doing later? You want to fuck? But as a frog, though.
In frog form.
Right.
Okay, well, shoot your shot, girl. You don't know what he's into.
And then, yeah. And then, yeah, she comes back later, not in frog form, but they don't show us how she came back from this. So it's really weird that Morgan Le Fay shows up. And
shows up later in frog form.
We never see her after she gets broken by blonde bobwig.
She never comes back after she gets smashed?
No. She never comes back after she gets smashed. So she shows back up later in frog form to taunt Gawain, and Gawain smashes what he thinks her, but ends up being like a clay version of the frog. And that's it. That's the last we see Morgan Le Fay.
So I thought they just didn't have the strength to show them like crushing a real frog or more bad animatronic head cuts off. You know, like
there was a brief moment where I went, I'm really glad they didn't show them, you know, crushing a realistic lifelike frog. I don't want to watch that right now. But I assume Morgan Le Fay was going to show up again, but no, she never shows up after that again, I guess. Yeah, you're right.
Nope. So, and the Green Knight in this dies, right? As opposed to the poem.
Yeah, so it's just weird that you put Morgan Le Fay in just to have Green Knight essentially dunk on her and then never do anything else with that again.
Okay, we've given women enough lines in this movie, Dave. Don't be pushing for more.
You think that was Connery?
100%.
Like, I'm not playing the character.
Women shouldn't be heard. Sometimes seen if thin.
Okay, Case, what about the queen, though? Because she's a thirsty woman that's got a few lines.
Yeah, but we
the
only
queen of
Leoness. Let her talk, like, once. She gets one long spot, and then we never see her again either.
Yeah. The Queen of Leoness has a guardian called the Black Knight, who I think it's either implied or explicit she's banging. Was it?
No, it's her husband. Yeah. It was her husband.
Yeah, it was her husband.
Until Gawain killed him.
Yeah, I don't know how much time he's got to be banging her, because he spends most of his time not in the magical city of Leoness fighting anybody who stumbles around it.
I think that was his ploy to get away from her, is be like, I got to go outside and guard, so leave me alone, woman.
Yeah, I got to go guard the magical city that no one can enter unless we decide to allow them into it.
Also, his like weird Peter Frampton filter he had on his voice was fantastic, because they did not cut out like him heavy breathing sometimes, and it just, I don't know, there's something so comical about the sounds of that battle that delighted me.
It what really made it for me was that the Black Knight had a horribly unfair advantage at every point. our hero character is wearing essentially aluminum foil for armor.
Yeah.
The Black Knight's on horseback. And every time they get even close to each other, the Black Knight just fails a little bit harder until he's on his back like a goddamn turtle going, please take me home to die, good sir.
Because he got stabbed on the back because he got flipped and the knife was standing up in the mud.
Yeah. Next to He-Man's foot.
Yeah.
He flipped him for
after
real.
He got knocked off his horse from a guy who wasn't on a horse.
Right, right.
And after he got in a fight with a guy who threw away his sword so that they could fight with daggers. It was,
yes,
it was a straight up Monty Python fight where like, dude, I'm trying to give you a fair shot.
I want you to win. I really do.
The fights, though, were something to behold. They're very inelegant. This is not a flashy sword fight movie.
Yeah, okay. The fights in this are bad, but I give them a pretty serious pass.
Me too.
Mostly just because, like, sword fights in movies are very, so very, very, very rarely good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But there was also, you could tell when the actors were actually tired, like it was maybe far down the day in takes. Because
yeah.
Some of it looked like, oh, it's like two exhausted people fighting, like in They Live with Keith David and Roddy Piper, when they slowly break down and they're just like, you can tell they're exhausted fighting. There was a touch of that in here.
Yeah, there's a few fight scenes in this movie where I can see the actors prompting each other on their choreography, but I'm kind of okay with it because I appreciate that sort of peek at that sort of peek behind the scenes. And like, none of it's good. There are some very floppy swords in this movie in a few different shots.
Yeah, some of those swords wave.
Yeah, yeah. One of the guys draws the sword, and it just like a rubbery boing, 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 boing.
Like, it's a Looney Tunes gag, man.
Well, I think we've had enough of Glitter and Sean Connery and this whole Arthurian legend. So, Dave, I want to start with you. 1984's Sword of the Valiant, would you watch it again?
Man, I came into this with some really high hopes. I kind of enjoy the Arthurian legends. They're fun motifs to play around with. Sean Connery, you know, he's a Bond. I'm coming in with some really positive vibes here. But overall, I was kind of disappointed by this. There wasn't as much going on. When I looked up and saw that the main character had originally been famous for playing Tarzan, I was really excited that he was going to be typecast as a himbo. But then we didn't really lean into that much. Gawain just kind of stumbled about throughout the film. The ultimate resolution didn't feel that good about it. There's a few scenes in this that are almost kind of fun ideas, but I was bored with how they resolved them. So, no, I don't think I'm going to watch Sword of the Valiant, The Legend of Sir Gawain, and The Green Knight, blah, 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 fucking blah. Again, the title takes longer to say than anything I feel about the film. Like, it was just kind of fine. I watched it on Amazon Prime. It feels like the kind of movie you find on Amazon Prime. That's not a compliment. Their library sucks.
I also watched it on Amazon Prime.
So that's a no from me. But Casey, what about you? Not starring Sean Connery, because he's not really that important, but really starring Sean Connery. Sword of the Valiant, semicolon, who gives a shit? Would you watch it again?
Dave, you gotta give the whole name. Oh, I mean, it's a crime that we didn't have more Sean Connery in open tummy onesies, because I always want that in my life. Sean has such an incredible wardrobe throughout his life, and I'm always excited to see what he's going to try to pull off in an 80s film. I wanted to like this movie a lot more than I did. It's a bit boring. I did take a nap, probably like an hour into this movie. It's like, I need to come down for 30 minutes, just not be looking at this anymore. This just was kind of a disappointment. I hate to be that person, but yeah, I'm not going to watch this again. There was not enough to hold me. It wasn't so bad that you couldn't tear your eyes away from it, like a Fatal Deviation situation. But this was just kind of wallpaper to me.
And a canon film.
I know. I wish they would have been more canon. Jay, how about you? Can you save us from falling into this swamp of sadness? 1983's Sword of the Valiant. Would you watch it again?
This is kind of tame for a canon film. Like, this is a very sober canon film, which is kind of interesting. You know, I read someone said that Sean Connery flew in on a Sunday, worked Monday through Friday night, got paid $1 million, and flew out on Saturday. And I don't know that that's necessarily wrong watching this movie.
Never mind. I take it all back. I love it.
I think the aesthetic's kind of wild. We didn't really talk about John Rhys-Davies, who's also in this and has my favorite scene where he plays. He has like a huge cat, I guess huge. It's like a 3 feet tall castle, and it's like 4 feet wide. And he's playing
Warhammer scene.
Yeah, it was playing Warhammer knocking toys over. And I was like, this is fucking great. It's completely bonkers. I was reminiscing about Xena Warrior Princess and how much I love that. And this sort of has that cheap aesthetic. I kind of like the train wreck that is this movie. It is kind of boring, but it's also nutso. And it has this weird Shakespearean aesthetic in parts, and none of it makes sense. And I kind of like it. I kind of like it. And I'm not going to run out and watch it again, but I might give it a peek-see once more time or two more times just because it tickles that weird Shakespearean bone. So yeah, I guess I'm going to break the mold and say I would watch Sword of the Valiant, Legend of Sir Gawain, and the Green Knight again.
That
so I guess
makes
that puts one out of three of us are whatever. Something is wrong with us. But if you guys seen it, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this interesting film. Well, that wraps up Folktales Month, guys. I think it's time for something new. And Dave, what are we going to be doing next month?
Over the years, comic books have been a big part of a lot of people's lives, and unfortunately, a lot of those people have made movies. So next month, our theme is Sunday comics. We're going to be watching movies based on, God help us, some of the worst comics that have been made out there into films. And I'm going to kick us off with Samuel L. Jackson as the Octopus. Does that make sense? No, not even if you've seen the film. But we're going to watch The Spirit and find out.
Follow us on Instagram at casey.cinema. Like us on Facebook, sh.ttycinema. Throw us a bone on Patreon/shittycinema or peepshittycinema.com. Check those show notes for those links. And in the meantime, let's turn off the lights.
I gotta pee.
Have Sean Connery turn your dinner into a roast.
What do I do with this key?
And you give Sean the key.
Ah, it feels so good!